This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we'll open up the phone lines to hear stories from Standing Rock after we hear from World Ocean Radio. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. SierraClub.org reports, the St. Petersburg City Council has formally approved the city's commitment to transitioning to 100% clean, renewable energy. St. Petersburg represents the first city in Florida and the 20th city in the country to make such a commitment. In an unanimous vote, the city council allocated $250,000 of BP oil spill settlement funds to an integrated sustainability action plan, which will chart a roadmap to 100% clean renewable energy in St. Petersburg. In addition, the plan also incorporates components of a climate action plan, a resiliency plan, and strategies for St. Petersburg to achieve a 5-star community rating. The 100% clean energy roadmap builds on Mayor Rick Crisman's executive order establishing a net zero energy goal for the city earlier in 2016. EcoWatch.com reports that the Finnish government has announced plans to stop using coal by 2030. Their energy and climate strategy for 2030 and beyond is the country's plan to phase out coal within 14 years. Finland aims to turn its energy production carbon neutral by 2050, with plans to switch its traditional energy sources to biofuels and renewable energy. The strategy will be presented to the Finnish Parliament for approval in March. Currently, Finland gets only 8% energy from coal, mostly imported from Russia. Renewable sources and nuclear make up 45% and 34%, respectively. HuffingtonPost.com reports, the United States Army Corps of Engineers has issued what amounts to an eviction notice to Tribal Chairman Dave Archambault. In an email dated November 25th, District Commander John W. Henderson says that safety is a priority among other concerns and that the portion of the Corps-managed federal property north of the Cannonball River will be closed to public use and access effective December 5th, 2016. A, quote, free speech, end quote, zone will be allowed south of the river. In recent weeks, confrontations between water protectors and law enforcement officials from Morton County, North Dakota, have resulted in the deaths of two horses, eye injuries, pulmonary injuries from rubber bullets, hypothermia from water cannons used in frigid conditions, and the near loss of an arm. National media has been mostly silent on these injuries until a New York woman, Sophia Walensky, suffered a massive blast trauma injury to her arm last week. On Sunday, November 20th, 400 protesters and police had a violent confrontation on a bridge closed by authorities, effectively blocking access to the Dakota Access Pipeline construction project. Walensky's injury is the most significant to date in the nearly six-month-long standoff at Standing Rock, North Dakota. And finally, ENN.com reports a key glacier in Antarctica is breaking apart from the inside out, suggesting that the ocean is weakening ice on the edges of the continent. The Pine Island Glacier, part of the ice shelf that bounds the West Antarctic ice sheet, is one of two glaciers that researchers believe are most likely to undergo rapid retreat, bringing more ice from the interior of the ice sheet to the ocean, where its melting would flood coastlines around the world. A nearly 225-square-mile iceberg broke off from the glacier in 2015, but it wasn't until Ohio State University researchers were testing some new image processing software that they noticed something strange in satellite images taken before the event. In the images, they saw evidence that a rift formed at the very base of the ice shelf nearly 20 miles inland in 2013. The rift propagated upward over 2 years until it broke through the ice surface and set the iceberg adrift over 12 days in late July and early August 2015. And at this time, I'm going to ask Mr. Mike Murphy to take it over.
Yeah, that's right. Well, before we go into World Ocean Radio, thank you very much, Naturally, for doing another fine job. We do have someone on the phone. We've got Monique Gabrielle Salazar on the phone, and she is the organizer, or one of the organizers, of an event that's taking place right after this program tonight called Stories from Standing Rock, and this is takes place at the Uptown Arts Bar, which is at 3611 Broadway in Kansas City. And so, Monique, welcome to Eco Radio KC.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, that's great. So was this your brainchild to have this type of event?
Yes, it was. I actually just returned from Standing Rock on Saturday, and I was part of the Turtle Island occupation on Thursday. And so I put together this event to, I was asked by the Lakota people to tell everyone what was happening there. So I'm fulfilling my promise to them by having this event and videotaping it to share with everyone.
So, all right, the Turtle Island Action, tell us what that was.
The Turtle Island Action. Turtle Island is currently under the police control, and it is a sacred burial ground for the Lakota people. So on Thursday, we had a group of about 1,400 protesters, protectors, and many who built a bridge on site to cross the river to Turtle Island and say a prayer ceremony for the ancestors.
Was that this past Thursday, Thanksgiving Day?
Yes. I don't celebrate that holiday, but yes, that was.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. So tell us what happened.
Well, it was very intense. I was part of the second group who went up to occupy the bridge, the same bridge where on Sunday all of the protectors were attacked with rubber bullets and combustion grenades and water cannons, and we held the space for quite a while and sang many prayers. While we were doing that, the first group had already gone to Turtle Island and built the bridge and were sending people over in canoes. The police were threatening us the whole time with water cannons and with non-lethal force, but luckily none of that was used and no one was arrested.
Wow. So what motivated you to go up there?
Well, I'm part Native, and I saw the mouth of the Missouri River while I was up there, the same Missouri River that flows through our city. And yeah. I'm tired of corporations' needs coming before the actual needs of survival for human beings.
Well,
and I just couldn't stand by and not do anything about it.
Did you go up with a group?
We did go up with a group. I had three other people with me. We took up over $2,500 in monetary donations, just absolute pounds and pounds of warm leather clothing, firewood, medical supplies. Our community really came together and supported us on this mission, and without them, we would not have been able to do it.
So for those of us who have not been there, maybe you can help, like, paint a picture. When you first get there, what does it look like? How do you know you've arrived?
You know you've arrived when you see the hundreds of tents and teepees and eco-structures and people and flags and horses and dogs. It's a monumental camp. On Wednesday, they did a count of just the women in Ocheti Shakolin, which is where we were, and there were 6,000 women alone.
Wow.
And all throughout our stay, there were just cars coming in and coming in and coming in and more people setting up camp. And the Veterans for Peace are out there protecting the water protectors while we pray. And they're sending more and more and more people there. And it's an amazing place. It's an indigenous space. It's a sacred place. You spend your time working and praying. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
So is morale good there? The people who have been there for a while, are they holding
morale
up?
Morale is more amazing than I've ever seen. My people are warriors, and we are encouraged to never have negative thoughts and to only think positively. It's a camp of prayer and ceremony. It is not a camp of agitation, aggression, or any negative thoughts. Everyone is our relative, and we are just protecting our water for ourselves and for future generations.
A couple of things I heard, I don't know if you can elaborate on. One was that there are, it is like nonviolent resistance training available to like kind of organize.
There's nonviolent resistance training available every day at 2 p.m. I attended it. I also attended an extended training. The training is done by the IPP3, if I recall that correctly. But they've been teaching non-resistance training or non-violence resistance training for many, many years now. And it was very intense, and we definitely did role plays and did formations and were sprayed in the face and all kinds of things. So, yeah, there's definitely very intense training.
Wow. Do you have plans on going back at any time?
I did promise the federal Apache chief a horse, so at some point I'm going to have to fulfill that promise.
That's great. And so again, you come back, you just came back Saturday, and you've been inspired to do this, to put together this event, to have yourself and other people. Do you know anything about other people and what their stories are? Like, is it...
Well, for our group, I believe it'll be myself speaking. Another one is ill, and I will be reading her statement about her experience from the camp, and I'll definitely be taking questions.
Well, that's great, because I guess there's been a lot going on. I mean, last week we read someone's blog about some things going on up there, and then there was this... tractor trailer that went up that with firewood over the weekend. Have you heard about that?
Oh yeah, we actually were we were in contact with them because we were going to take some of it if it didn't all fit in the trailer. So yeah.
Wow. So did you see them up there or
we didn't really see. It was hard to find people because, like I said, when we were there were probably about 12,000 people in the camp. And also when you go in, your phone battery basically dies for no reason. And it's very hard to get signal up there. And there's a place called Media Hill where it's like the only place that you can get signal in the camp. And they have a bicycle where... people take turns bicycling, which charges everyone's cell phone. Well, one night, one of our campers was up there, and a drone flew over, and everyone's phone battery died.
Wow.
So it was kind of suspicious. And then on my phone immediately had no service and was not working at all, would not charge anything. And then 4 days later, it suddenly rang in my pocket. And then when we left camp, I put it into a charger that we had that was like a little solar-powered charger, and it had half a battery. So communications in and out of the camp are definitely being compromised, and it was a level of technology I hadn't seen before, and it's rather frightening.
Yeah, that does sound, that does at the very least raise an eyebrow. What about, like, harassment or, you know, maybe I shouldn't characterize it, but were there any problems getting in and out of the area from law enforcement? Or
I had no problems. No one in our camp had any problems. I don't think it's as extensive as people have mentioned. I have heard stories of people being turned away. It's usually because they can find something illegal about your car, whether like your tags are expired or you don't have the proper insurance identification. There have been people that have been harassed going in between the camps with, like, you know, not using proper turn signals, things like that. So while I didn't personally experience any of it, I have heard of it firsthand from other people.
Well, that's fascinating. And anything else that that you think our listeners should know, either about the event tonight or about your experience? Or what is needed?
Well, yeah, if you want to hear all about it, we're going to create an indigenous space at the Arts Bar I'm going to go through the 7 Lakota values, which is the same thing we went through at camp. And then I will tell the entire story from beginning to end of everything that we experienced. So it will definitely be worth it. I'm also going to try and live stream it on Facebook, although I'm not that technologically apt. So we'll see how that works out.
Oh, did you guys have any questions?
Yeah. You said there's 12,000 people at the camp?
There's probably more now, and that's only at the Ocheri Shakoin camp. That's not including Rosebud or the Sacred Stone camp.
Now, how close are those camps together?
The Rosebud camp is directly across the water from Ocheri Shakoin. And then Sacred Stone, you kind of have to go out on the highway a little bit and, like, around this big curve. But if you were to walk it, it would not be that far away.
I haven't seen any photo. I guess I'm not on the right places, but I didn't know there was that thousands of people. I'm glad to hear that, though, that there are thousands of people gathering to protect the water.
Yeah, there's, I think, 2,000 Veterans for Peace alone over there.
Wow.
Right now.
Okay, I've got a question. What exactly are they looking for Obama to do in terms of stopping this? I'm assuming you want some kind of executive order, but
yeah,
if he grants that,
though,
is there a
order.
Risk that that's going to be set aside by Trump?
Well, Trump does have a stake in the pipeline, so quite a big one. An executive order from Obama would stop it. There's also, and I don't understand completely the legalities of this, and nor would we have the time to go into it, but there's several deadlines that the pipeline needs to meet in order to retain their right to pump it prices from the 1970s. And if the pipeline is not completed by that time, then that contract runs out, and they would have to pay modern-day prices, which is something that they probably cannot afford. So basically, an executive order from Obama would stop it and would prevent them from completing the pipeline in time to make that deadline.
All right,
also, the Indian treaties are being completely violated, and they should be enforced because that is tribal sacred land.
I had a question when you spoke about the positive mindset that was encouraged during the camp or while you're there, thinking of everyone as... I don't know the exact terms, the words that you use, but brothers and sisters.
Relatives, yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. How did you maintain, I'm just using the word spirituality. How do you maintain, or how are people maintaining that spiritual mindset, that positive mindset amidst all that's going on? That seems to be negative, you know, that's could potentially be deadly.
It is. I mean, the thing about having that sort of, I'm going to say enemy like that, is that there's only one way to actually embrace them and still stay sane, which is, you know, to embrace them with love and prayer. So everywhere around the camp, there are signs that are very, you know, specifically naming the camp as a camp of prayer and ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
We were awakened before the sun rose every day. And we prayed for an hour at the sacred fire, and then we all marched down to the water and prayed down at the water for about another hour. So every morning is begun with about 2 hours of praying. And then you work all day long. And, well, if you're doing what you're supposed to, you work all day long. And it's being surrounded by so many people who are mindfully trying to be positive and mindfully banishing negative thoughts from their minds and mindfully keeping the goal at hand and victory in sight.
So tell me, some of this work is obviously just maintaining that positive mindset that takes work, that does not come easy. What is some of the other work, though, that you had to do daily while you were there?
Well, our camp did a lot of work. We picked up trash all over the campsite. There was lots and lots of clothes donations and food donations to sort through. So we sent volunteers to different places to do that work for them. And then direct action is also seen as work. There's also art spaces, There's a medic tent where you can volunteer. There's construction going on where you can volunteer. Anyone can go and chop firewood at any time. There's childcare. They're building schools down there. There's kitchens. There's meeting spaces, communal meeting spaces that need to be run. It's an entire society in a microcosm.
So are people are people planning on staying there? You said they're building schools. I mean, are people going to stay here?
Sacred Stone is actually slated to become an eco-village. Okay. It is on tribal land, so it can't be touched. So they are building a lot of permanent structures there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to be, you know, ecologically designed and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And there are many people that are planning to stay until the end. Mm-hmm. I met people that have been there for 5 months and don't know how long they're going to be there. There's many, many people wintering there. There's a lot of semi-permanent structures going up, some adobe houses, some, you know, ones made out of straw. It's the ingenuity was really impressive.
That was great. Monique, I wanted to know, apparently the Army Corps of Engineers announced its plans to close public access to Standing Rock to the camp on December 5th. And I wanted to know if that was talked about when you were there, and are they planning, or any thoughts on how they're planning on dealing with that?
We did practice an evacuation on Thursday of the women and children from the camp. It was all very organized. They were taken across the river to Rosebud, which is on tribal land. So that was practiced. We got everyone out of there. I stayed behind to participate in the direct action, so I was still there. But it's something they talk about. It's something they've practiced, getting, you know, the most vulnerable of the population out right away. It's incredibly organized down there. And while I was not privy to all the information, it's everything is discussed, is consulted, and nothing is done without the elders approving it. So sure. It's a very egoless society.
Great.
Craig, you got another question? Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us, Monique, before we wrap up?
Pretty much, I just hope to see you all at the Arts Bar tonight at 7.
And where is that's right there on Broadway?
36th and Broadway, 3611 Broadway, yes.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Monique, for checking in with us, and we will and good luck with the event tonight. And keep us posted, because we'd like to air these stories on this program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for letting me come on the show and share with everyone.
Okay, great. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, take
care.
Have
a great night.
Yep, you too. Before we go to a break, we do have... another caller on the air. Is that you, Tommy?
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Tommy Sherwood's on the phone, and Tommy was involved in the efforts to help collect firewood to be shipped up to Standing Rock. So what was that experience like, Tom?
Well, it was really a great experience because so many people in the community were involved. The Ballinger Recycling provided a semi-truck and a driver to take the wood up there with Standing Rock, and KKFI got the word out. And then people from all over contributed wood and brought wood to send up, and some chainsaws were donated and log splitters. It was really a wonderful experience.
Did I see you donated a wood stove?
Yeah, that was in October.
Oh, okay.
My wife and I took a wood stove up there.
Oh, so you have been up there yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. So and that was back in October. What was the experience like for you?
Well, you know, I would describe it as the best of times and the worst of times. It's a really wonderful community up there, and really aware and energized and excited, and so that on one hand, and then on the other hand is the massive militarized police presence that's in collusion with the oil companies to defend the pipeline. So it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I got you. We just had Monique on the phone, and she talked how positive there was a concerted effort to keep a positive mindset. Well, she was just up there this past weekend. You noticed
good.
That too.
Yeah, absolutely. Concerted effort to keep a positive mindset, and you know, I mean, at the same time, the helicopters and airplanes were circling all the time, and you know, they never let you forget that they were there, and they never let you forget what the people are there for too.
Right. So tell us, you donated some wood this weekend, but you also had a truck and then donated your services to go around and help bring wood to the site where the tractor trailer was. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. In fact, originally I had planned on, I put up a bunch of wood to heat our house for the winter, and I was going to donate some of that. But then there were so many people that had wood that that needed it hauled that really I just hauled wood.
Okay, cool. Great.
And I was there. I got there at 7 o'clock. I think I was the first load there. And I think by, I was one of the last loads, too. I think by 10:30 or 11, by 11, they had that truck full.
Wow.
So just in a few hours, the community, the whole, you know, Kansas City area really stepped up and provided the wood and got it there and got that truck loaded. And like I say, the folks there at the recycling plant were just great. You know, they were just really wonderful. They were we were loading the wood on pallets, and they were shrink wrapping the piles of wood and then putting them in the truck with a forklift and weighing them as they went on the truck so that the truck would stay in the legal limits to be on the road, you know, weight-wise, and it was just a really smooth operation.
Well,
and they really deserve. They're my heroes. I'll put it that way. They really did a good job.
That's great. It's great to hear about how the community comes together, and things like that. And KKFI did, you know, air announcements about it, and we were glad to help out. But it seems like
heard about it. And so I know that was really appreciated too. It's really valuable service to coordinate that way, you know, in the community.
Yeah.
So really appreciate that.
Anything? And, go ahead.
Well, and just getting the word out about Standing Rock. You know, the rest of the media has been pretty quiet about it, and it's really I know it's really appreciated any media outlet that that is airing that kind of news.
Yeah, I thought I saw posted on the Facebook event page that maybe Channel 41 was planning on coming down to film wood being loaded. Did you see any media down there?
You know, I was just going back and forth in and out, so they might have been there, but I didn't see them.
All right.
But I wasn't there. You know, I was on the road more of the time than anything else.
Sure. So what else do we need to let our listeners know? Anything about either your experience going up there or over the past weekend?
I would just say, you know, to continue to be aware of the needs up there. I know that wood, firewood is a really major need. And then cash, too. You know, there's a lot of funds, legal funds, bail funds, and funds to get construction materials and things that they can get there locally, but they just need money for. So cash is really good. And I would say, too, just to be aware, you know, when you're donating stuff, to remember that warm you know, unfrozen storage space is really at a premium. So things that react to being frozen, probably at this time, they're better off being obtained locally up there.
I got you. Okay, well, Tommy, I appreciate you checking in. Did you guys have any questions for Tommy? Okay, so, Tommy, we appreciate you checking in with us. And I know you're at a basketball game, aren't you?
Yeah, I just stepped outside. Haskell women, they got off to a bad start, but they're kind of catching up now. So
all right,
we'll go see what happens next.
Yeah, you better go in there and pull for them.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks for checking in.
Thanks for all you do.
All right, you too, Tommy. Thank you. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Tommy Sherwood talking about his trip up to the Dakota Access Pipeline and also his help with getting wood up there this past weekend. That was a Herculean effort. And just to underscore Tommy's point about KKFI and coverage of the Dakota Access Pipeline, certainly Democracy Now! Has been doing it big time. And tomorrow, Amy's spending the hour with Bernie Sanders. If you have any questions, you can email them to stories@democracynow.org. Bernie Sanders is one of the few politicians who actually have to really speak out against what's going on in Standing Rock. Also, tomorrow on Law and Disorder, there's going to be the more coverage on the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. And also on Interfaith Voices, the concept of sacred land on Interfaith Voices tomorrow at noon. So lots to cover on that issue, and then KKFI is glad to be a part of that. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. If you have any questions or comments, this is pretty loose and pretty open. The phone number to call is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. We'll be back.
Tune in to a special forum with drone communication expert Sean Westmoreland.
Because what people need to understand is the drones are not the aircraft itself. It's the global network of surveillance, of the people and the infrastructure that's around the world.
To hear more from this special forum, tune in Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Celebrated globally on the Tuesday following Thanksgiving, Giving Tuesday kicks off the charitable season. You can give a voice to music and public affairs programming underserved or ignored by corporate media with your tax-deductible donation to KKFI on Giving Tuesday, November 29th. Please donate securely online at kkfi.org or on Facebook at 90.1 FM KKFI. Click that donate button. So easy. Giving Tuesday, November 29th.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A new video game could help young people understand how their real-life actions affect the environment. It's called Eco, and it's set to be released in 2017. In the game's simulated world, players work together to build a civilization by farming, hunting, building, and selling things. To survive, they must ensure humans and nature both flourish, all while averting natural and man-made disasters.
Everything a player does in the game Eco affects the ecosystem in some way, positive or negative, and they can, if they're not careful, end up destroying the whole planet that they're playing on. So the goal is to kind of save it from an impending disaster.
That's Stephen Barnett, a programmer for Strange Loop Games, the company that created Eco. He says people of all ages can enjoy the game, but it was developed to teach middle schoolers how people influence and depend on the environment.
Everything the players do has consequences. So, for example, if players want to start on a big cooperative building project together, then they have to also consider the impact that it'll have on the plant and animal life.
By motivating players to consider how their choices affect their virtual world, Eco may also inspire greener choices in real life. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Here we are back on Eco Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and we do have another caller on the air. You're on the air, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi, this is Jack out in Shawnee.
Hey. So
good evening.
You got a question, comment?
Yes, thanks for the show. It's great. And your last guest suggested giving cash, and I'm wondering if anybody listening might know, or if that previous guest might know, where should you send cash? I mean, to the tribe? Is there a website? Or in terms of bail money, that sounds like a good cause to me, getting people bailed out of jail. Is there a particular entity or website to go send cash to? That's my question.
Yeah, okay. I don't think any of us have the answers to that, but other folks are willing to call in. Yeah, there's probably a lot of needs in terms of, like, you know, just sustenance, but then also legal defense, and not just criminal defense, not just defending those who are being arrested, but, you know, defense of, you know, injunctions to get things stopped, that kind of thing.
Yeah, good point. So if anybody's listening who knows or has a suggestion as to exactly who to send that to, I'd be listening. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, that's great. We appreciate that question. I will say I'm looking at KKFI's website because, like, I'm looking at the episode information for Law and Disorder tomorrow, and they're saying they're given a website. This is the Ositi Sakawan camp, and this is O. Well, I might not have to spell this because this may be spelled wrong. So anyhow, you might want to listen to Law and Disorder tomorrow morning at 9, too, for more information on this and what kind of support people can be of. If you have any questions or answers to Jack's questions or any of the other things posed tonight, give us a call, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. In the meantime, we're going to go to World Ocean Radio, and we'll be back after this.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. There are so many instances of conflict in the process of change, the residual entropy of the old ways confronted by the disconcerting challenges of the new. When what we value is at stake, we often revert to positions of black or white, either or, that brings us to a confrontational paralysis that is disconcerting, disappointing, and dangerous. In many such instances, we turn to our legal system, not our political system, as a means to resolve and enforce based on law, precedent, and justice. Last year, my son and I were invited to attend a staff retreat for the Center of Biological Diversity, an advocacy organization for endangered species founded by Kieran Suckling, Peter Galvin, and Todd Schulke, who first met as U.S. Forest Service employees during the conflict over the conservation of the spotted owl and exploitative forest practice. We met at a wilderness retreat center in Oregon. Good people, mostly young, many lawyers, all dedicated to using the legal system to advocate for species on the verge of extinction and against initiatives and interests that would sacrifice them to financial return. After dinner, like an elder storyteller by the fire, I was asked to talk about water and how its conservation in all its cycles of circulation from mountaintop to abyssal plain was essential for the support of all life, plant, animal, and human, was a paradigm for future value, organization, and behavior. I was truly impressed by the talent and dedication of these young people who could so easily pursue another career, but who were so evidently committed to another kind of engagement on behalf of another kind of client. Their practice extended throughout the United States on behalf of many animals, wolves in particular. But today I want to celebrate their recent victory for the bearded seal in the Alaskan Arctic, a species with fairly robust population and no immediate sign of decline, not yet listed on the International Union for Conservation Science listings of endangered. In October, however, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the listing of the bearded seal as endangered because of the evident future impact of climate change on its survival. The center has been pursuing this goal in the courts for more than 8 years, and the decision may have positive application for future conservation cases under the Endangered Species Act based on the precedent for forward-looking consequence of rapidly changing circumstance by climate change. Global warming is occurring in the Arctic, and sea ice is melting and receding at record pace. This change provides substantial evidence that these effects will endure and cause changes for the foreseeable future in supporting circumstance for sustenance and survival of the bearded seal and other Arctic creatures. In 2008, another court ruled that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service lists the polar bear and wolverine as endangered for similar reasons. Predictably, it was the Alaska Oil and Gas Association and the Petroleum Institute that filed the first challenges to these prior rulings, now overturned. But it is probable that even these decisions will be appealed up to the Supreme Court. Engaging in these legal campaigns is expensive and time-consuming, and the other litigants have ample resources to continue the proceedings. But every decision, every precedent matters, and each adds to the legal edifice that can grow into powerful rules for protection. The Center for Biological Diversity is one of several not-for-profit organizations engaged in such campaigns: the World Wildlife Fund, the Conservation Law Foundation, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Nature Conservancy, and others. And many of these also promote natural resource protection by lobbying for legislative action, purchasing natural habitat areas for conservation purpose, and pursuing international treaties and agreements for additional protection. All good. But I remember that evening in the Oregon forest when I met those frontline lawyers from the Center for Biological Diversity. The sense of optimism and possibility was palpable among them. The determination that the protection of natural life in all forms was a right and noble cause, and that outcome could and would be reached by the rule of law. In that spirit, they were warriors, and I was proud to be among them. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
This World Ocean Radio episode is part of the Earth Optimism series, 24 episodes profiling conservation actions and innovations to reduce our impacts on the planet. The Earth Optimism series is brought to you by the World Ocean Observatory in partnership with the Smithsonian Institution's Ocean Portal to raise awareness of the Global Earth Optimism Summit during Earth Day weekend, April 21st through 23rd, 2017. Share your ideas at earthoptimism.si.edu.
Yeah, that was World Ocean Radio. And this is Eco Radio KC, and we've been just pretty much opening the phone lines, talk about the Dakota Access Pipeline, and we do have another caller on the air. Christopher, I believe it is. Are you on the air, sir?
I am. Can I go live on Facebook? We cool with that?
Yeah.
Cool. We're going live. I'm with the Red Road Awareness Pay folks, and we have a Facebook page, but... there's three of us in our caravan, and we're heading up there right now. We're about, I don't know, what, 100 miles out of Omaha, our council bluffs. We're going to spend the night, and then we'll be there tomorrow.
Wow.
We've got firewood. We've got blankets, medical supplies, and good spirits. We're all in good spirits.
Where are you guys coming from?
Council Bluff, 122 miles. We're on 29.
Where did you guys start your journey?
Louisville, Kentucky.
All right. That's great. And so what inspired you to make this trek?
Me personally or?
Yes, you personally.
I've been on this trek since April. I asked this man to put me on the hill for Vision Quest, and one thing led to another, and now I'm here. I haven't really done anything like that. I worked in work and like never did my ceremony, but... it just seemed like the right thing to do when I heard about it.
So I just pulled up the Red Road Awareness Facebook page. What can you tell us about Red Road Awareness?
Well, they're a family of folks that really want to provide ceremony, and we're just available all the time for whatever, you know, lots of folks who run lodges and other ceremonies that have a real strict time, like we're going to do it every Saturday. We're just available, you know, folks come and ask us for ceremony, and that's what we do. Or we've got teepees up at Standing Rock, and we're keeping them sustained and helping wherever we can. Like the woman who was on first, you know, we've spent time in the donation tent, we've spent time in the kitchen, we've been spending time whoever needs help. We brought teepees up for the grandmas. Say that again? Yeah, we're bringing an EMT up this time. We got a man that's coming with us for the first time who's never done anything like this before.
So what are you guys' plans? How long are you going to stay?
That's to be determined. There's a whole lot of things going on. There's the Dakota 38 ride, which is happening, and probably be part of that as well. We'll be here until that starts, and then after that's over, I'll probably be there for the rest of the winter.
And do you know about the Army Corps of Engineers saying they're going to cut off the public access?
Yeah, we have three teepees right on Main Street is what we call it. And we're aware of what's going on up there. We have a party of 11 people there now waiting for us because we were on an emergency run. We thought we were going to have to move the camp. So that's why we left. We dropped everything we were doing in Louisville and made this trip happen.
Why did you think there was an emergency? Because of just recent
events?
Because
the Army Corps of Engineers has given us till December 5th to vacate.
Oh, okay. So I got you. Okay.
Well, that's changed now, right? Yes. Because of the snow, they think that's changed. We may not have to move now. But that was the reason we left.
I don't think that my impression, what I'm reading here, is they're not kicking people out. But they're going to cut off new access.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, too. You probably have a better source than maybe we do, because the last time we came up, all the things that we heard was going on, only about 10% of it was right. So being outside the reservation world, you know, it's not the same. You know, being there is where the information is.
Right, right, right.
So even with our sources, was like, well, that wasn't right.
Right.
Anyway.
All right. Well, we sure appreciate you checking in with us, and good luck, and be careful, and all that stuff. And
thank you, and thank everyone who's been giving and supporting, and whatever it is that you're contributing, man, it's going to the good fight.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you know where people can donate money to folks up
well,
there?
Do you know who it is do you have a contact there?
I'm just wondering if there's maybe a site set up where people can donate.
Well, like
online.
For us personally, the Red Road Awareness Camp, who's there to support we're in the Seven Council Fire Camp.
Mm-hmm.
We have a donation button on our webpage, on our Facebook page. And I actually have been checking to some people today also from it was started in Louisville, and I've got four other people from all over the United States who want to contribute too, and so it's hard because like we're right now there's four of us going up here and we don't really even have winter boots, you know. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying, so it's kind of hard not to say, okay, well, should we take that money and buy ourselves some winter boots? But you gotta understand, if you have a contact, it's best that you can trust somebody.
Right.
And like I said, Red Road Awareness, all that money is going to the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And supporting what, I don't know how to say any better, that the message of peace and love, and let's all figure it out, folks.
Well, thanks so much for checking in. I'm glad you happened to be going by and checked in with us. And,
yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, good luck to you. And keep
thank
us, maybe check in with us on the way back.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right. Take care. We're going to go to another break, and then I guess we're just about ready for the calendar at this point, huh?
Yep.
So, all right, let's hear some messages.
Women are now the majority of the workforce. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we ask how money, work, marriage, and divorce mix these days. Then, you've probably seen the shiny new bridge vans around town. They've got union drivers, and we'll talk to ATU President J.P. Walker about the effects for drivers of this new Uber-like public transport service. Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Missed last week's Echo Radio KC? No worries. You can listen online at kkfi.org.
A new job description for the ubiquitous ditch on this current cast.
Roadside ditches crisscross every watershed. They're everywhere.
That's Rebecca Schneider of Cornell University. She says ditches move water so quickly they cause flooding downstream and dry out the area upstream. Ditches also wash excess nutrients and sediment into streams. But changing how ditches are managed can help. Schneider says that sending the water into a wetland, lining the ditches with vegetation, and making them more shallow and wide would help to slow the water.
If we can replumb the watershed, disconnect ditches from streams, we can reduce flooding, we can reduce water pollution, and help with drought.
So with a little makeover, ditches could be providing a multitude of benefits. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, everybody, this is Naturally, and I've got your upcoming events. Don't forget tonight, right after this show, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Uptown Arts Bar, you can go and hear stories from Standing Rock. The first caller we had on the air, Miss Monique, she'll be there, and you'll just get to hear stories about what's going on right now. It's at the Uptown Arts Bar, which is at 36th and Broadway, right after the show up until 9 p.m. On November 30th at 7 p.m., there's an event called Native American Traditions. As environmental issues become more critical, a local professor shares Native American traditions and insight into sustainability and ecological issues. Deborah Williams, professor and chair of environmental science at Johnson County Community College, will speak at 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 30th at the Hudson Auditorium at the Nerman Museum of Contemporary Art on the JCCC campus. Both presentations are free and open to the public. At 9 a.m., Williams will focus on the environment as she explains their traditional ecological knowledge and how this knowledge may be used to complement Western science's approaches to sustainability and ecological issues. And then at 7 p.m., she will highlight three sites with significance to the Plains Indians that are all within a day's drive of Kansas City area. There'll be a public reception prior to the evening presentation beginning at 6:30 p.m., and you can get on the JCCC website to find out more information about that. The Clean Energy Business Council is sponsoring a Cocktails for Clean Energy networking event from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, December 1st. It'll be at Zocalo at 620 West 48th Street. That's on the plaza, I believe. You can go to climateandenergy.org to find out more information. And when you start stringing the holiday lights, there will inevitably be a few that don't work. Don't trash them. Instead, help keep thousands of pounds of wire, plastic, and light bulbs out of the landfill by recycling them. Southeast Enterprises, a sheltered workshop for people with developmental disabilities, has been recycling lights since 2011. That first year, the group collected about 500 pounds of lights. In the past 4 years, the program has grown with more than 165 drop-off locations, collecting more than 240,000 pounds of lights. There's no fee to donate or recycle your lights, and 100% of the lights will be recycled. Lights can be dropped off all year at Southeast Enterprises, which is located at 6701 Booth Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. But there are 165 other locations open through the 7th of January. So to find a location close to you, you can go to southeasternenterprises.org and click on the tab KC Recycles Lights. That's all I have for you for the upcoming events. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Mike Murphy.
All right. Thank you very much, Natural E. And thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC. And we're going to go out like we like to do with This Week in Water. And do stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
Water officials taken hostage in a drought-stricken country. That and other stories on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
As the inauguration of Donald Trump looms in about 6 weeks, negotiators between the U.S. and Mexico are trying to arrive at a water-sharing agreement about the Colorado River.
The U.S. is obligated by treaty to send 1.5 million acre-feet of water, nearly half a trillion gallons, across the border every year. But the provisions laying out the rules on what happens during a drought are vague and undefined.
Water levels at Lake Mead are at their lowest levels since Hoover Dam was built in the 1930s. If the level drops more, users of Colorado River water fear that supplies could be cut, affecting 40 million people.
As reported in Politico, without a new U.S.-Mexico agreement, it's unclear whether or how those new cuts could be shared across the border.
The negotiators are rushing because they don't want to put off an agreement until after Trump is sworn in because of the racist comments he has made about Mexicans and because of the time it would take for a new team to get up to speed about Colorado River issues.
Meanwhile, as negotiations were going on between Mexico and the U.S., water managers from three states and the federal government held an emergency conference call the day before Thanksgiving.
According to the LA Times, they are trying to reach a similar agreement on reductions in draws from the Colorado.
Many of the federal officials who've been working with California, Nevada, and Arizona are political appointees and will be replaced in the new administration. So the heat is on for users and providers to agree on cutbacks now. As Americans were cooking Thanksgiving meals, international scientists were preparing a new report. It concludes the Arctic is warming fast, which will have consequences elsewhere on the planet.
You may think, hey, wait, didn't I hear this last week on H2O Radio? But sadly, this is not a rerun.
The new study is by the Stockholm Environmental Institute and was released the day after Thanksgiving.
This report warns about 19 tipping points that could be catastrophic.
According to the scientists, some changes are tipping points because they're so substantial and often abrupt that they fundamentally alter how climate systems function.
Among these tipping points in the Arctic are the growth in vegetation on tundra, which replaces reflective snow and ice with plants that are darker and trap more heat.
Another tipping point, higher releases of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, from the tundra and permafrost as it warms.
The report also warns about shifts in snow distribution that warm the ocean, which can result in altering climate patterns as far away as Asia.
President-elect Trump spent his Thanksgiving holiday at his Florida coastal resort, Mar-a-Lago.
Although it's a luxurious location right on the ocean, the New York Times is reporting that potential real estate buyers are not bullish about owning property so close to the water.
New buyers are asking questions about climate change and its effects on property.
Those looking to buy in areas like Miami are wanting to know how far back a property is from the waterline.
And how many feet above sea level it is, or if it's fortified against storm surges, and does it have emergency power and sump pumps?
State officials in Massachusetts and New Jersey may force real estate agents to disclose a property's climate-related damage, such as previous flooding.
The real estate market appears to be responding to climate change rationally, in contrast to Trump, who named a climate denier to head his EPA transition team.
The lack of water for people in Bolivia is worsening. The supply is so limited that many people only have enough to drink, and they cannot bathe or wash clothes.
Earlier this month, neighborhoods in the capital of La Paz had a rationing plan imposed. Residents had to go without water for 60 hours at a time before getting just 12 hours of access.
Then last week, that was extended to periods of 3 days without water and just 3 hours to replenish supplies.
The lack of water has led to social and political unrest. Large protests have erupted in the country's second largest city, El Alto, and last week, residents took water supply officials hostage, demanding a solution to the crisis.
Climate change is causing glaciers in the Bolivian Andes to melt at an alarming rate, according to a recent study. The situation poses serious risks to the millions of people who rely on the glaciers for drinking water, hydropower, and irrigation.
And finally this week, as you may recall, last summer Canada had one of its worst wildfires in history near the town of Fort McMurray, Alberta.
Thousands had to flee their homes and businesses with little more than the clothes on their backs.
That included Spike Baker of the Wood Buffalo Brewing Company, who was making a pale ale at the time.
Baker turned off the brew and fled the premises as ash rained down and flames licked the highways.
Days after making it to safety, Baker remembered that he had left his last shipment of malt sitting outside the downtown brewery.
When he finally did return, he found that luckily the building had survived, but it was thick with ash and filled with smoke.
And the malt? He expected for sure it would have to be thrown out along with all the beer.
But to his surprise, lab tests came back saying the malt was not only safe to consume, but it had been completely altered by the fire. It had absorbed the smoke to change its flavor.
So, as the fire had changed Fort McMurray, so too, Baker thought, it should change what people drink. The brewery decided to make a one-of-a-kind whiskey with the malt.
The result was 200 bottles called the Beast, the same name firefighters had given the massive inferno.
Sales of the whiskey will raise funds for people affected by the fire.
So as the expression goes, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Or in this case, a smoky beverage to soften the blow of rebuilding a life after disaster.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Sustainable water management means more than just conservation. Learn about water efficiency and resilience at awwa.org/sustainable.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.